Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. More than 10 years after its first democratic elections, then a coup and reconciliation, Haiti is returning to political violence. Last week, opponents of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide crashed a tractor through a prison wall, sparking an uprising where thousands took to the streets calling for Aristide's ouster. The scenes of outrage are a marked change from 1990, when the former Catholic priest and champion of the poor was overwhelmingly chosen as the country's first elected president. In 1994, after a coup, he was reinstated as president with the backing of the United States. Aristide recalled the dream of Martin Luther King to the people of Haiti.
A great man once declared, "I have a dream." 28 years later, and over 1,000 miles away, word of that dream echoed in Haiti as this proud nation dreamed of democracy. Home today, in our beloved Haiti, we say that we had a dream, and that our dream of democracy has become a reality.
Today, some say democracy in Haiti is a dream deferred. The U.S., the EU, and others charge Aristide with corruption. They're withholding millions of dollars in aid until he and the opposition party can agree on a framework for new elections. Connection listeners, should the U.S. continue to withhold aid to Haiti until reforms are made? What does the continuing instability there teach us about the confluence of poverty and democracy? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined on the line by the First Lady of Haiti, Mildred Aristide. Madam Aristide, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
As you well know, the United States is deciding to withhold hundreds of millions of dollars in aid to Haiti. How do you answer those who say that that this should be the case until President Aristide does more to restore democracy?
Well, if you look at what was the initial cause for what is called the political crisis now in Haiti, it was said to arise from the May 2000 legislative elections, and it was really focused on the methodology used to calculate runoff elections for about 8 senators. Well, since then, those 8 senators, and it's been a year now, those 8 senators have resigned. There has been an agreement on the part of the government and a part of Famila Valach, which is President Aristide's political party, for all of the members of parliament elected in those elections to reduce their terms in half and, in fact, to go to early elections. And so if the crisis was caused by political by an electoral crisis, well, that those have been addressed. And so now we've got to look at what really are the causes for this, in effect, this embargo on assistance, on loans, which have been already approved by the IDB. If we take the IDB loans, which amount to about $146 million, they've been approved by the Haitian government, by the Haitian parliament, by the IDB staff. All the conditions have been met, and yet there still is this block on the release of the funds.
There are other concerns, however, apart from the political ones which you just mentioned. Are there not? There are also charges of human rights abuses on the part of those responsible, or those for which the Aristide government is at least responsible. There are charges of misuse of funds, other kinds of financial improprieties.
No. There aren't any charges. Those charges.
Criticisms,
those,
then.
Yeah, those are critiques that are being launched. And so with respect to the loans, for instance, which in respect to corruption, charges of corruption against this government and against perhaps past governments, the government of Haiti has invited the IDB, for instance, and they were down last week, to come to review the conditions at the Ministry of Finance, to look at whether how to go forward with the loans. They're being said, but nothing has really been Let me step back. The OAS has been involved in the negotiation process and has made a series of recommendations on how the government can go forward and solidify some of its institutions. The government has agreed to go forward with all of the recommendations that the OAS has proposed. And each time we find ourselves at a point where things are about to go forward, there has been an eruption of violence, and I can point to three incidents in the past year. In July, there was an attack on the police headquarters. In December, there was an attack here at the palace. And 2 weeks ago, in the northern town of Gwanayiv, there was an attack at the prison, which you alluded to earlier in the reportage. Now, it would seem to me one has to question now, who benefits from this instability and this disruption on the political landscape? The government has acknowledged that, yes, the police force is a new police force. It needs further training. It needs to be reinforced. And all of the things that the cooperation with the international government, with the international community, could help reinforce are those things that are now being withheld. And so it's a very difficult situation to say, yes, you have to improve, and then to withhold the assistance that would assist us in improving. We are the first ones mm-hmm. to say that our judicial system has been a corrupt judicial system for over 200 years.
Madam Mercy, let's get into that more as we move into this hour. I just want to ask you a bit about President Aristide. I happened to be on the air the night of President Carter announced the outcome of negotiations there, and the U.S. force went in. It was a very dramatic day, and he was returned to Haiti, as we had mentioned earlier, an almost Mandela-like figure. I mean, this was a homecoming of historic proportions. So many people, as you'll recall.
Absolutely.
Why then has there been such a turnaround? I think that many in the international community, and I would, from what I'm reading, gather in Haiti, are very surprised at how things have become undone so quickly.
Well, let's look at it. What is the promise of democracy? The promise of democracy is not just the electoral process. It means food. It means jobs. It means health care. It means education. And in Haiti, those are, I would say, the four priorities for the government. The ability to deliver those services is what is important and will be the measure of success. Now, when President Aristide returned and continued his 16 months of office, which were remaining after the coup d'etat, in that short amount of time, he was able to double the number of high schools, public high schools, in terms of construction, and as we know, disbanded the military. After his end of his election, for the first time in Haiti's history, the political power went to another democratically elected government. President Préval finished his five terms, and President Aristide was again elected with an overwhelming majority. And so some of what you hear, and I would say that a lot of what you hear is what is being said to really maybe to justify certain policies that are taken with respect to Haiti. But if you come to Haiti, as there had been a poll done 2 months before President Aristide was reelected back in November 2000, overwhelming majority support for President Aristide and for his political party.
So
the situation where there is hunger in Haiti. All of the health indicators, not all, but I would say one of the major health indicators, infant mortality. What it was at the time that one of the health projects under the IDB loan, what it was then was 74 deaths per 1,000 births. Today it stands at 80. And so if we continue to see this deterioration, then yes, you're going to see some anger on the part of certain people.
Thank you, mm-hmm. Madam Aristide. I think we should get some of our Connection listeners in on this conversation. We'll get back to you in just a moment. Connection listeners, what is the promise of democracy in Haiti, and has that promise been forestalled? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call, 1-800-423-TALK. We're speaking now with Alex Dupuy, professor of sociology at Wesleyan University and the author of Haiti in the New World Order. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
How would you frame, you've been listening to Madam Aristide talk about how she sees Haiti's predicament and how things have gotten that way, but how would you frame the argument right now, or the question, I perhaps should say?
Well, some of what Mrs. Aristide said is correct. That is, there was the outcome of the elections of 2001 that is at the root of the current political impasse. But it's not all just one-sided. That is, the government was very slow in responding to the criticism of the OAS to redo the May elections. They first refused to do that. It was under after a great deal of pressure and aid was withdrawn that the government then agreed to renegotiate the elections. And indeed, as Mrs. Aristide pointed out, they have come to an agreement with the OAS on redoing the entire parliamentary elections in 2003, and the opposition coalition known as the Democratic Convergence has been stalling reaching an agreement, largely because they don't have much popular support, and they know that if they do go to elections, they're likely to lose. The problem also stems from the violations of human rights that the Irish government has been at least accused of perpetrating, or at least supporting. And indeed, much of that remains unresolved. At the top of your show, you mentioned that the uprising or the revolt in Gonaive, the town of Gonaive recently, was led by opponents of Aristide, and that's
this
not exactly...
This is the attack on the prison that opponents fostered. And,
right, that's not exactly accurate. The people who led the attack on the prison are supporters or were supporters of Aristide, and what precipitated that was that under pressure from the OAS and the international organization, Aristide began to crack down on some of his supporters who've been engaged in violence against members of the opposition and so forth.
So you said these people were supporters and are no longer. They
right.
were in prison.
The leader, that's correct. Well, no, the leader of the movement in Gonaive was a supporter of Aristide who, after he was arrested, then broke with Aristide because the claim was that Aristide supported them and encouraged them to engage in these activities, and now they're arresting the leader, and the claim was that if they're going to arrest the leader, they should arrest Aristide as well. This is at least what the Metaye, the leader of the of the movement who was freed after the attack on the prison, is now alleging. And indeed, there has been, the problem has been that Aristide encouraged, if not directly or at least indirectly, the growth of a number of organizations, basically gang organizations, who have been perpetuating violence against members of the opposition to intimidate the opposition. And much of that is documented in the recent report of the OAS, released after its fact-finding mission, after the December, the January 2001 allegedly attempted coup d'etat against the government. So the charges of human rights violations are serious, they're real, and President Aristide has not done enough in the past to crack down on that.
Madam Aristide, I think we're going to have to wait and ask you to respond to that, which we would like for you to do in the next segment of the show. And also we'd like to ask you about what you think the U.S. responsibility toward Haiti should be. Let me just ask you to finish quickly, Alex Dupuy. You said that these human rights violations are serious.
Yes, they are serious.
All right. Well, we'll be talking to both of you when we come back. Connection listeners, the number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio.
From Boston University.
I- I'm Jackie Leiden, and this is the Haiti Connection. We're talking in this hour about the problems and potentials of Haiti. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My guests are Mildred Aristide, the First Lady of Haiti, and Alex Dupuy, a professor of sociology at Wesleyan University and author of Haiti in the New World Order. Madame Aristide, when we went away, Mr. Dupuy had talked about problems of human rights abuses under the Aristide presidency, and also we were talking about the U.S. responsibility toward Haiti. Why don't you answer some of the things that we've been talking about?
Sure. I'd like to answer 2 points that Mr. Dupuy made. First of all, with respect to the government's response to the, and it was May 2000, I think he said 2001. The elections were in May 2000. President Aristide was elected in November and took office and was sworn into office in February 2001. By March of 2001, the government, this government, went to the OAS and proposed its recommendations for a resolution of what was an electoral crisis with respect to the May 2000 election. And it included the reduction in the terms of all of the parliamentarians elected in May, the year before, and also an early election. By July of that same year, 2001, the seven senators who were alleged to be contested resigned irrevocably. So when he says, I think that they delayed in responding to the OAS recommendations on correcting some of the problems with the election, I think that the timing shows that there wasn't that delay. And I would say that since the government has proposed the early elections, as he said also, the opposition, which is called itself the Democratic Convergence, has continuously stalled and refused to go to elections, knowing that they would no doubt lose, given the support that Fumi Lavalla still enjoys. Now, on the second point that Mr. Dupuy made, based on the events of 2 weeks ago in Gonaïve, as he says, the situation arose as a result of the arrest of someone who, on allegations of burning some public buildings. I don't remember the exact charges against him. He was arrested and had been in jail for a month. There had been demonstrations against the arrest. And, in fact, the day, 2 Fridays ago, they stormed the prison with a tractor. And not only this one person, but about 150 prisoners were released, including many of the prisoners who had been arrested after a public trial on the Rabateau massacre, which was one of the most heinous massacres that occurred during the coup d'etat. And then these prisoners have joined forces and were fomenting lots of unrest in the area. Now, the government was continuously called to use force to respond, and it was clear that the prisoners were kind of hiding themselves in a very popular area, and all efforts were extended by this government to avoid another Rabateau massacre. I really take issue with Mr. Dupuy in saying that the president has encouraged violence, and if you look at certainly at all his speeches, at everything that he has said publicly and his calls for peace, and you compare that with what the opposition has continuously said since the day President Aristide was inaugurated as president back in February 2001, their continuous calls for violence and unrest, then one can, I think, can have a good guess as to the source of the violence when you see to whose benefit it inures. So I would take issue with those 2 points that Mr. Dupuy raised.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Madam Aristide.
Okay. You're welcome.
Let's turn now to two people who visit Haiti a great deal. Nancy Dorsonville, anthropologist and fellow at the Harvard School of Public Health, and Paul Farmer, professor at Harvard Medical School and founder of the Clinique Bon Sauveur in Haiti. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
Paul Farmer, give us a picture of what's going on in Haiti right now, of daily life. I must say, one tunes into Haiti, and as bleak as you think the situation is, after you've read a bit, it only seems bleaker. But you know the details. Let's hear from you.
Well, you know, I have this deep respect for the Haitian people because they have managed to keep up this struggle for having more decent lives for almost 200 years. And I think that that's perhaps not a common response from a doctor who's practicing medicine, but I think it's important to keep in mind when you look at the everyday trials and tribulations, and those are not a lack of access to clean water, a lack of access to good education, and a lack of access to basic health care. Now, I've been here 20 years. I'm talking to you from Central Haiti right now, and I've seen various slices of Haitian history, the Duvalier dictatorships, the violent interregnums that were all sponsored by military dictatorships, and then the brief period in which there have been democratically elected governments. And I feel as a doctor, I understand why the Haitian people consistently keep voting for the same people when given a chance. And that's because those are the people who say, well, the poor should have the right to basic health care, basic education, and basic water. And, you know, it's impossible as a doctor to not point out that the three major aid loans that are now being blocked, from what I understand, by U.S. veto privilege are for health, education, and water. So the view on the ground is dismal, and as I heard part of the previous exchange, Mildred Aristide pointed out that infant mortality has risen in the past few years, but how could it not if the resources that would be necessary to rebuild Haiti's public infrastructure and to make it anew where it has not been established, how could it not rise if every major powerful force outside is disrupting the process of rebuilding? So for us, it feels a lot like very powerful forces, sometimes in Port-au-Prince and sometimes outside of Haiti, are really trying to block a basic movement forward in health, education, and sanitation. And those forces are not coming from the Haitian government, as far as we can tell. We've been working with the Ministry of Health ever since there's been democratic governments. We've had a lot of help from them.
Okay, thank you. Nancy Dorsonville, you've also been in Haiti. Give us a sense of what it's like on the street, what you're hearing from the Haitian people. There's been a lot of political turmoil this summer. Are things getting, would you say, more tense?
It depends on who you speak to. I think inevitably, because of the various constraints on the government and the ripple effect on health, social service, education, people are more reserved. People are somewhat weary because they realize, as Dr. Farmer said, that there are outside forces that are dictating what's happening internally. But despite the weariness and despite the appropriate response to the limits and the constraints that have persisted, I think people are still very hopeful. People are very aware that there have been negotiations and that there have been consistently peace offerings, plans for economic development, for conflict resolution, which have not really come to pass yet. But nonetheless, I think, there's a balance in there, a balance of the dreary reality and the squalor all around, which has deteriorated as a result of the withholding of humanitarian funds. But there is also a determination that, in fact, 2004 keeps very much at the forefront of our consciousness. As you know, we were independent in 1804. So we're very determined to have a resolution, a triumphant resolution, in fact.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy. Connection listeners, we're talking about the problems in Haiti this hour. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We asked several GOP critics, Republican critics of President Aristide, to participate. That would include Congressman Benjamin Gilman and Congressman Henry Hyde. We haven't heard from them yet, but listeners, we will put the question to you, perhaps, as to whether or not aid should be withheld as a way to force Haiti to be more democratic. Let's take a phone call now. We're going to Willie. Hello, Willie. You're calling from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi. Thank you. When I look at, it what in my mind is sort of over 200 years of a simplified kind of look at Haiti's history, it seems that virtually every action the U.S. ever takes, including the recent stuff where, they're against humanitarian policies of President Aristide, no doubt because at one time in the man's life he may have read more than a paragraph from a book written by Marx, perhaps. an endless malevolence and hostility. And I'm wondering if somebody could address the possibility that, you know, the original revolution in Haiti by Toussaint and others, where they overthrew the French rulers, killed most of the white people, the slave revolt, was absolutely terrifying to the owners of the owners and rulers of the United States at the time. And has there been an institutional culture in our government, State Department? Has there been a sort of culture among the American owning and ruling class?
In a word, Willie, you're talking about
animus toward Haiti that has caused this.
Okay.
Yeah,
you're talking about perhaps race discrimination or some.
No, it isn't. You know, it's the idea that a group of the workers overthrew the owners and killed them, and you know that it just terrified Jefferson and the other slave owners at the time.
Good. Alex Dupuy, let's ask you to answer Willie, and also please explain to us how support for Haiti breaks down, or support, or I should say lack of support for this approach to withhold funds breaks down in terms of partisanship in the U.S. Congress.
Well, it's clear that the main opposition to the support for Aristide comes from conservative members of the Republican Party, primarily, and the current Bush administration. There is strong support for the Aristide government on the part of the Black Caucus, and most recently, Senator Dodd has called on President Bush to release the funding that was earmarked for Haiti by the IDB and other international financial institutions. So the support and the opposition to Aristide pretty much is along a partisan line, one could say. The primary reason, I think, for the withdrawal of support for Aristide by the Bush administration and the more conservative members of the Republican Party goes back to Aristide's first election, and where he did propose a sort of a social democratic program, and a mistrust that they have of Aristide to carry out the reforms mandated by the international financial institutions, the World Bank, and so forth.
What about Willie's deeper question, do you think, Professor Dupuy?
It's hard to put it in simple terms. It is certainly true that the Haitian Revolution was extremely frightening to the U.S., but it's not clear to me that one can link the current animosity to Aristide to that long historical memory of the revolution. I think if Aristide did the bidding of the international financial institutions, there probably would be more support for him.
So
it goes back, I think, to the politics of his return to office
Farmer, let me just get Paul Farmer in on this as well. Do you think that there is, Paul Farmer, a sense of pride, despite all of Haiti's severe internal problems, in the fact that it's running up to its bicentennial as a republic, this revolt, certainly something like that in historical terms would be seen, I would think, to be a huge achievement?
There is a very deep sense of cultural pride, as Professor Dupuy knows very well. And even though I support his caution in attempting to find, you know, direct lines of causality regarding, you know, U.S. responses back in 1804 and those now, there's certainly, as pointed out by the caller from Madison, Wisconsin, an unbroken line of hostility to any movement towards social and economic rights on the part of Haiti's leaders. So if, again, to use Professor Dupuy's word, if Aristide does the international community's bidding, it's true that the right wing of the Republican Party in the United States may let up on him. But at the same time, he can't do the bidding of the international community and still think about the patients who I see here in clinic.
I see. Okay, it sounds like we may have lost that line. Willie, thank you for your call. Let's take another call. Tina is calling from Lynn, Massachusetts. Hello, Tina. Hello? Do we have Tina from Lynn, Massachusetts? All right. We seem to have lost her. We'll go to Arnold, who's calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. The number to call, by the way, is 1-800-423-8255. Hello, Arnold.
Hi. How are you doing there?
Okay.
Listen, I remember when the troops were sent over a number of years ago by Clinton, and then right after that, there were reports that nothing was working. The crime rate has gone up. Now, both of your guests, the Professor Dupuy and Madame Aristide, traded a lot of different factual, differences in interpretation. The key question I would like to ask them, is it appropriate to actually use standards of democracy? In other words, is an election really an appropriate standard of democracy to use, given the cultural history of that country?
Even three decades of dictatorship.
That is correct. And why do we as a country always come in and say democracy means free elections? Why haven't we taken another approach, perhaps to attempting to change the culture of it rather than to debate back and forth? So that's the central question I'd like to broach.
Thank you, Arnold. Nancy Dorsonville, let's let you answer that question if you can. Is an election the correct standard? Is it an imposition? Are we judging and asking too much?
No, the election cannot be taken in isolation, although the election is definitely a central issue in democracy building. What happened in May 2001, despite some allegations of discrepancies in certain localities and in certain districts, was in fact a democratic election. And the percentage of people who voted and the number of people who voted for the Famila Valas is undisputed. And Professor Dupuy himself said that the Convergence Democratique did not have enough votes to even expect to win that election.
The opposition. Go ahead.
The opposition, yes. Now, we're talking about the antecedents of what may be informing the stance of the present U.S. government toward Haiti. But I think what's really at the bottom of this, the root cause that we need, or the result that we need to look at, is what's happening underground in terms of further deterioration of already the most impoverished country in the hemisphere. And what we need to look at is that without the infrastructure that only the state can provide, without the leadership and the resources that can only operate through the Ministry of Health, Board of Education.
We will look more at those root causes when we come back. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston.
I'm Jackie Lydon. This is the Haiti Connection, and the number to call is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking about the crisis in Haiti, a summer of political turmoil, the international community withholding hundreds of millions of dollars worth of aid. My guests are Nancy Dorsonville, an anthropologist and fellow at the Harvard School of Public Health, and Alex Dupuy, professor of sociology at Wesleyan University and author of Haiti in the New World Order. Let's go to Lynn, who is calling. Mozart, who is calling from Lynn. Mozart, hello.
Yes, how are you doing?
Welcome to the show.
I have a question. I grew up in Haiti, right? I left Haiti aboard 1987, and I came here, and I never went back. But all the people that I know that went back to Haiti, they're all saying the same thing. Haiti is getting worse and worse and worse every day. My question is, why should we give money to Aristide when Haiti is not getting better? The human violation is there. We know that he's doing it. I think we should get rid of him.
All right. Thank you for that opinion, Mozart. Professor Dupuy,
may I say?
It doesn't really, Nancy, you're more than welcome to join in, either one of you. I think I would like to hear from either one of you something about conditions, the conditions in Haiti under which people live. One reads about people waking up with an utter sense of hopelessness, people eating bouillon mixed with concrete in some of the establishments that have sprung up inside former prisons, a magnitude of poverty that sounds more like what one might read about in Africa. Nancy, certainly you yourself said at the outset here that conditions are getting worse, that child mortality is on the rise.
How can they not get worse when the very source of assistance is being withheld? The amount
tell me what a day is like for Mozart was just talking about everybody that he knows who goes back there says it's getting worse. So I'd like to hear how. I'd like to hear what a day is like for a poor Haitian person.
It's getting worse in the sense that they have no potable water and they have to walk long distances. And once they get there, there is competition for access to the little bit of water that's available. It's getting worse in that we are not able to maintain an old electrical system. It's getting worse in that we cannot afford to supply medication to people who need it, beds in hospitals. It's getting worse in that the schools that were built when President Aristide returned, it's very hard to maintain them. It's very hard to provide books for children. But the answer to that is a plan. It's resources which to implement the plan, and also time. I mean, first we talk about a segment of 16 months. Now we're talking about a year without an operating budget.
Mm-hmm. Alex Dupuy, let's answer Mozart's question. He said, why should we give money to President Aristide if he's not doing the right thing? Nancy, sorry to interrupt you, Nancy, but just outlined how conditions have deteriorated. I think it's a question that Mozart asks straightforwardly. If Aristide isn't changing things for the better, why give him more money?
Well, I think one has to put the issue of aid in a certain context. The aid was earmarked for Haiti on the condition that there were democratic elections. Democratic elections were held. Aristide was fairly elected president, even though there was a boycott by the opposition. But at least the OAS and other international observers did not contest his election. The election of the majority of the parliament members was also deemed legitimate, except for the 8 or 10 senators whose elections was called into question, in which now the government has agreed to resolve by holding completely new parliamentary elections in 2003. So the conditions, at least some of the conditions demanded by the international community for the release of aid have been met. Now, the other conditions, obviously, are the proper use of the funds that are allocated to the government. There's alleged corruption in the sense that funds given to the government are not put to use for the purposes for which they were designated. And this, certainly, a oversight could be implemented in terms of how the funds are used and distributed and so forth. But one also has to understand that without the aid that Haiti is promised, Haiti is a very poor country. And without the disbursement of funds, the programs that many of the international institutions would like to see implemented, as Dr. Farmer mentioned, in terms of health care, in terms of sanitary conditions, safe drinking water, and so forth, will not be implemented because the government is certainly constrained in terms of the resources at its disposal. So at the same time that the international community wants the government to implement a series of reforms that would go to alleviate the miserable living conditions of the majority of the population, they are also withholding that aid for reasons that are more political than anything else. That is,
Wayne, again, let's take another call here. Thank you. Wayne is calling from Natick, Massachusetts. Hello, Wayne.
Hi. How are you? I was in Haiti from April of 95 till August. I was a police trainer working for the Justice Department. Hello?
Hello, Nick. Yes.
Hi. And I saw it right from the beginning, the corruption taking hold. We had a fairly chosen police, national police force that started out. And while I was there, was being infiltrated, and the government was putting its own people in large groups within the police force. They were committing political assassinations. The corruption on the police force itself, the people who were selected, the peasants, the Haitians, were fantastic. I mean, these are kids that really wanted to do a job. They were put in the field without any maintenance or fuel allotments to their vehicles. They were put in the field with one uniform where they were supposed to get at least two, no hats. Money was starting to be taken out of their pay, supposedly for insurance. This happened in Gonaive. I was in up at Cape Haitia, St. Mark's, in Limbe. Uh-huh. And the corruption was incredible, and it was by the government.
Wayne, what was the response of people like yourself? Were you able to do anything? Did you complain to the government?
Number one, we never saw a journalist. I mean, we were in the field for those months. I was part of the deployment group that went out. I trained them in firearms when we first got there, and then they needed people to go out in the field with the first and second class in deployment. And it was just terrible. I mean, we saw no government officials whatsoever. We were told it was the most important situation in Haiti at the time to put a national police force out there. The people were starving for order and fairness. And the people I trained and the people who were selected through the Justice Department through a lottery system to this day, I could cry when I think of those kids out there trying to do the job.
What do you think of the question that we're asking about withholding aid to Haiti, Wayne, in light of what you've seen, the question on the table, not just here at the Connection, but in the U.S. Congress and other places, is whether or not to withhold hundreds of millions of dollars of worth of aid to Haiti? What do you think? Do you think it will?
Well, I guess if you look at it and you say out of 100% of aid, that probably 90% of it will go in the pockets of government officials and people, that don't need the help, the upper class, and maybe 10% would go to the bottom. I guess 10% is better than nothing, but I really think that somebody ought to hold Aristide accountable here. This was unbelievable when the UN and the Justice Department were there. I can't imagine. I mean, I have friends that I trained with and were down there with that are dead now. They've been assassinated, shot. We had roving groups of appointed government police that were appointed outside our system, roving around. They didn't take instructions from us or anybody else, and they would drive around. They'd take our vehicles without any permission.
All right.
They were working against the police. The appointed police department down there.
Well, thank you.
And it's just gotten worse.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call, Wayne.
Sure. Yeah.
Nancy Dorsonville, you've had a chance to hear Wayne's story. That's just one foreign aid worker, if you want to call a police trainer that. One person coming in to try to address the situation. His story, what do you make of it?
Well, I have some questions for him. I mean, how can he prove that those people were in fact from the government? And perhaps if they were from the government, they were from a particular segment of the government, to annihilate everything that the government has done and to just unilaterally just discredit everybody in the government is not fair, and it's not logical, and it's not really serving the people on the bottom who are suffering. I think that in any government, you will have certain people who are doing illegal, immoral, illicit things, and that in that regard, Haiti is not different. But to just personify that is wrong, and that's why we're still not getting the level of assistance that we need, and that's why Haiti continues to be the most impoverished nation in the hemisphere.
There are many calls, however, and we couldn't take all the phone calls that we got in this hour, Nancy, saying that President Aristide has not shown the leadership that he might have. Doesn't the government have to take some responsibility in a story like Wayne's? He's talking about a lot of extracurricular justice, vigilante justice, if you will. Certainly that reflects on the person in the president's office, doesn't it?
Of course it does. But, people are talking about withdrawing support. He never got any support. I mean, the $500 million have not been disbursed, even though we were paying interest on some of that money for over 6 months. That's the first thing. What are they going to withdraw? Some people allege that some money has been given to non-governmental organizations, and that's fine. Those are for discrete programs in discrete communities. But in order to really mobilize and harness the kind of restorative, corrective action that is needed for us to sustain the fledgling democracy that we're trying to build, it has to go through a central course. And even the incident in Gonaïves is another example of attempts that are being made to redress some of the mistakes that were made by supporters. Mm-hmm. But that cannot then come down to one common denominator and just say this is in the person of Aristide. Aristide is limited by constraints from the EU, from the US, from the World Bank, from the IDB, the IMF, and people within his party. Okay. And we have to work with him as the democratically elected president who received the majority of the votes more than once and begin somewhere.
Alex Dupuy, we're about to finish, so let's give Alex Dupuy a chance here as well. Thank you, Nancy. Alex Dupuy, what do you think the U.S. should do at this point? We have just a couple of minutes to go here. Do you think that it needs to come in with more people like Wayne to help restore justice and then give aid? Do you think that there should be some other sort of way of contributing?
No, I think the aid money that was earmarked for Haiti should be released, but certainly certain provisions ought to be also put in place to make sure that the money that is allocated is used for the purposes for which they were allocated. So I think there can be safeguards put in place, and I agree with Ms. Dawson-Ville that the central government of Haiti is in the position to implement the programs that would benefit the majority of the population. And I think given that the conditions political conditions that were imposed by the international community for the renewal of aid have been met, or that the government is willing to meet them, that they ought to go ahead and support that effort in rebuilding of the country's infrastructure and building a better health care and so forth for the majority of the population. So I think aid, as Senator Dodd put it recently, that the government is being unfairly singled out and unfairly treated by the Bush administration and the Republican supporters in Congress, and I think the aid should be released.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to my guest, Nancy Dawson-Ville, anthropologist and fellow at the Harvard School of Public Health, Alex Dupuy, professor of sociology at Wesleyan University and author of Haiti in the New World Order. Earlier, we spoke with Mildred Aristide, the First Lady of Haiti, and Paul Farmer, professor of Harvard Medical School and founder of the Clinique Bon Sauveur. You can continue this conversation online at our website, theconnection.org. The Connection is produced by Sean Carberry, Lisa Chow, Sarah Field, and Kelly Jones. Graham Smith is our senior producer. I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is WBU.